Welcome to Art Ladders, The Creative Climb with Valerie Allen and Armin Merzman. This podcast is focused on interviews, features, and stories about art. It's for artists and art lovers. I'm Val. I'm the abstract artist in the group, joined by Armin, the realist. Hello, listeners. Hi. Hey, we're here at episode 58. And today, Armin and I are having one of our coffee talk conversations. And it will be about roles that we've had through our lives that have added up to our artistic knowledge.
Right. I mean, this is something you think about or should think about early on as in your art career. And we're going to talk about some of the experiences that we've had that were successful or maybe some things we would have done different looking back. So enjoy this 58 episode.
Yeah. You know, and this was a fun one to think about because through our journeys as artists from long ago until now, we have had many different jobs and some careers that have funny stories, challenging stories, and hopefully stories that you can relate to. And that's what we're going to talk about. But it's kind of
Once you get out of art school or you get at a certain age where you become serious about your art, most of us, 99% of us, cannot make a living off of fine art. That's just a fact, right? And so you have to think about what can I do to make a living, but yet do art.
Right, right.
One of the first things is don't go in an art career at all. You know, I mean, work, you know, wherever, you know, as a tech somewhere in a business or, you know, those kinds of things. And that's fine for some people. And then they go home and they do art. Mm-hmm.
I kind of started that way right out of art school. I ended up getting a job with one of the airlines, which was totally un-art related. But it gave me a chance to kind of think about things. And then I ended up moving on to working in a crazy credit department at a department store.
Oh, that sounds fun.
And that was like one of those jobs that you just drudge in. It's like a little, ooh. But while I was there, I always in the back of my mind wanted to be a visual merchandiser, meaning a window dresser in department stores.
Right.
When that was a big deal.
Well, that used to be a big deal in New York, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Competition.
Yes. So I took a leap. I was very young. I didn't even have my college art background behind me as experience. Mm-hmm. And there was an opening in that department. And I remember taking the elevator all the way up to McAlpin's department store in Cincinnati, Ohio, got off the elevator, walked into the visual merchandising director's office. It was a beautiful office. Mm-hmm. It had all the props and all the decorations and this big, I'll never forget, this big round fan window that would have been, you know, like an 1800s architectural building, which it was.
Yeah.
And I sat down. He was very patient, listened to me, this young woman, telling my dream of being a visual merchandiser. And he looked at my little tiny high school portfolio and he was very kind. He let me down easy, you know. You get your college behind you and you get some experience and then come back and talk to me. So I ended up in the credit department for a few more months, but it did motivate me to go back after community college and enroll at UC and in a arts program. So it all happy ending. Yeah.
Well, for me, the art jobs actually started very early on. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about when I was 11 and 12.
That's crazy.
Because I designed the logo for the Texan restaurant in the Tri-Cities. And I designed a little cowboy thing because my dad was a friend of the owner. So I was about 12 years old when I designed that. And they made three big plaques of it. And I also thought I'd make a business by hand painting people's names on their mailbox.
Oh, that's clever.
It wasn't easy to get these stick-on things like today.
Right.
So I had a little kid. I'm 14 years old. Had a little kind of briefcase thing and my supplies. I'd knock on the door and I said, would you like to have your name painted on your mailbox? And I think three people know that wanted me to do it. So I was already thinking at that time about how can you make money in art?
Right.
So that was my, you know, I just kind of unknowingly, I mean, I was nine and there was an ad in the paper for, what was the name of that place that sold outdoor things?
Arts
and stuff. I forgot the name of it. Yeah. They were all over the place at that time. They had an ad for somebody to do decoupage.
Oh, yes. Decoupage.
So, you know, I was doing art. I thought decoupage, painting, drawing. It's all the same to me. So I went in and tried to apply for that job as a nine-year-old. And they treated me really nice. Obviously, they didn't hire me, but they got a really big kick out of that. So I kind of walked away. What's wrong with them?
At 9 years old. That's so true. You know, when I think we artists, we know from a young age on that that's what we want to do.
Right.
We don't know quite how to get there yet, but it's spinning around in our brains and we see these one ads and go, hey, I can do that.
Yeah.
And that's a good attitude for artist to have.
I still never got it. Oh. Decoupage.
Oh, you've never done any decoupage?
I don't think so.
It's called mixed media art.
Oh, yeah. Collage. I've done that.
Doing that. Boy. So, speaking of, you know, once you get into maybe your teen 20s, I was kind of off the rails at that point because I'm doing waitressing jobs, you know, I have reservations for airlines, worked for a travel agency. It took me a while, even though in the back of my mind, art was always playing, to land a job that I felt was art related. How about you? Did it come?
No, it was, it seemed to always be art related. 3 weeks after I turned 18, I joined the U.S. Air Force for 4 years and I became an illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
So talking about putting the cart in front of the horse, all of a sudden I'm an illustrator and I haven't gone to art school, but I was taught by my dad and I had a lot of knowledge. And so I was working with, you know, the kind of materials you would have worked on in the early 70s.
Right,
there's no computers, you know, cutting codoliths and all this.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's kind of like an ad agency.
But after about a year and a half of doing that, all of a sudden I started getting commissions from generals to do a painting of their wife. And and I got quite a few of those. So they took me away from designing, you know, for their magazine letters. And all of a sudden I was doing portraits on your dime, by the way. I had no problems with it. And then I thought to myself, who's actually paying for this, you know? And so that was my first introduction into my art, what I was doing as a selling.
Uh-huh. That's really, really cool. I think my very first one that I thought was going to be art related, I really did. And I was working in Madison, Wisconsin at the time at a travel agency. An ad came up for working with a printing company. And so I'm thinking, and by then I did have my college degree. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, oh, you know, I'm going to work in a lithography, fine art studio, blah, blah, blah. It ended up being a commercial printing company, which is fine. And I was hired. I was hired in there as one of the three managers of their print shop, which was, you know, Xeroxing at the time and offset printing from little, you know, perfect bound books, things like that. But what that taught me, and you brought it up with working in the materials of the day, was that during that time period, and I worked there about 3 years, I learned a lot about deadlines. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot about herding cats or herding different people that were in the projects, the ad agencies, the art directors of the ad agencies could be very brutal if you miss a deadline, and rightfully so. And so I became very, very aware of time and quality and production and talking the language of art, the language of commercial art. And that taught me quite a bit and gave me a lot of confidence at the same time.
I think one thing you learn in the commercial art part of it, you learn a lot about design.
Right.
And you also learn a lot about having a really correct eye.
Yes. You know, an editing eye.
Yeah. You look at every little area when you have to, or else it comes back to you. So when you design something, things have to line up.
That's right.
You start learning about design through your work.
Through the work coming out. We have this saying, and I know a lot of you have heard this, garbage in, garbage out. So meaning the copy coming in, you really do need to look at that. And if it's not up to par, you got to get back to the person who created it and say, listen, this is not going to work well for your project.
Well, and what you do pulls everybody else up.
That's so right.
Do it over. You know, people are not
the timeline.
Happy.
They're not happy. So the customer service end of it, definitely.
You know, I'm talking about my stuff before I went to college. Now I have to say, and people who know this podcast, that I learned very early on. My dad, he was my teacher. And once I went to college, I had this design background. I had this other background. And I was pretty good in college, you know, pat on the back. But it was because I had so much experience in it already.
Right. And you were totally motivated too.
I was.
You were doing something you were passionate about.
I was.
You know, college for me was very, very much a joy, definitely.
I was a waiter for about 2 days.
Okay.
I
can't even picture this.
I got fired.
Okay.
So
I was a pretty good waitress, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah. I know that, what do you want?
But, you know, roles like that, that we fill, that's the type of job that you can go to, put in your 6 or 8 hours and go home, and you have the energy to create art. Or some of these jobs, like, for example, teaching art can be a creative process in its own right. And when you get home, you're just darn worn out.
Oh, big time. I think teaching art has its good and bad qualities. You're using your creative mind
and
other people's work, and you come home and you are creatively burned out sometimes.
That's so right.
But we'll get into that as we talk about
different roles that we've played.
Yeah.
So on down the lane of history, what was your next?
Well, once I got out of the Air Force, they paid for me to go to school, and I lived in the Tri-Cities, and the Delta College was known as having the best art department of any community college in the state.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I remember shuffling in there. There was this guy, well, we just interviewed him, Larry Butcher.
Right.
Right. Well, anyway, you know, I went in and I showed him my little portfolio. Always had a little portfolio, even then, even before school. And he's like, yeah, that's good. You know, I think you need to take a drawing class, because he was teaching painting. So I took a drawing class with Linda Menger, who was a wonderful teacher too. But I decided at that time that I'm not sure if I'm going after a degree. I just wanted to learn things.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to learn to draw, to paint, printmaking, all those things, you know. Uh-huh. I was excited about it. I did take other classes. If I got a C, I was lucky, you know. It's like, you know, I'm doodling away in a math class. I'm doodling away in an English class.
Right.
You know, it's just, at that time, I would tell somebody today, don't do it that way. But at that time, that's what I did.
That's what you did.
I don't regret it, really.
Well, you don't regret it, but why would you tell your future self or future artist why you should have done that, or some of the decisions made at that point? What would that have brought to the table for you?
Well, if I could tell my younger self what I know today, you know, I would because it was easier to get tenure and you go to college and get tenure after that and kind of have it made, you know,
if you were hired as a professor. Yes.
Yeah. And so you would have needed that master's degree.
Right.
Which is even now hard.
Yes.
But I still question, would I have been as good of an artist if I concentrated on just being a teacher? Mm-hmm. Although I learned so much from being a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think if you really want a world of knowledge, be a teacher. But don't lose focus on being an artist, because sometimes people are teachers and they lose focus on being artists themselves. Mm-hmm. So I went to school to learn as much as I could about drawing principles and design principles and painting and all those kinds of things. So that was my first job, really, you know,
mm-hmm.
Right. Paid for it, but the taxpayers paid for it. Thank you, by the way, guys.
Well, because you were on, I guess, what would that be, like a grant or?
No, what do they call it, GI Bill?
GI Bill. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. And you used it and cultivated your art
six
knowledge?
6 years of it, I used it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Perfect. I took a couple of side turns through my college days. Of course, I started at a community college. And then took a break right after for just, I don't know, travel and kind of a marriage that did not work out. One of those deals.
Oh, yeah.
You know that.
And, yeah, oh, do I ever.
And so I took a pause, let's put it that way. And then, you know, after that interview with the window dresser, I thought, I gotta do this. I gotta get back in. Well, I took the route of design because I thought, in a design world, you do make money. You do have different responsibilities. And I chose fashion design. Mm-hmm. Made sense for me. And I was in it a year. But during that time, I was intermingled with the fine art studio classes. And that's when I thought to myself, I definitely want to be a fine artist. End of story. Made a transfer. Had my portfolio accepted. It took me two times though, people. So what I'm telling you is don't give up if you don't get in the first time.
Right.
If you're passionate, you just go ahead and do it and try again. So I did that, but I come from a family of a lot of teachers. And so they were really on me to go into the art education portion of it. Uh-huh. But I was hellbent that it was going to be fine art all the way. And it was for the rest of the time period.
Mm-hmm. But fine art, could you have lived off it?
No, I couldn't have lived off it, okay. But I was stubborn and I was going to make that work.
That's
somehow.
Why we got married so many
That's
times.
Right.
We said, okay, what could make I do to work. Make money? Get married.
No, that wasn't it. That wasn't it. No, not it. But when I, here's the advice I would give my younger self at this point. Would be once I completed that undergrad BFA, I've always in the back of my mind thought, why didn't I just step up and go through the MFA program at that point? Immediately, just one after the other. Because when you are out a few years then at that point, it's very hard to, to get accepted into a program and to even want to do a program because you're on your own route. So I don't know. I don't think it held me back at all. Because like I said, I do teach art. I do mentor art, love that. But to be a college professor type situation, that to me is, wow, those people are a gift to students. Because they put their heart and soul in it. And, you know, the teachers at the university level to cram in all the teaching and then do their own work. If you see an artist like that, and I know one, Andrew Reeder out there, who does this.
Yeah.
It is few and far between where you see a huge practicing artist who's also an art professor.
Well, it is, you know, later on when my job was running an art school at the Midland Center for the Arts. Uh-huh. And I would hire teachers. That's how I met you.
Oh, that's right.
And we got married.
Yes, we did.
We had a good, great interview, by the way. I regressed here, but, you know, so I would always look at people's artwork before I even looked at their resume.
Yeah.
And if they were doing great artwork and they're doing it as well as teaching, chances are I'd be really excited about it, more so than what paper they had or degree they had.
That's true. That's a good way to look at it.
I did not want to hire any art teachers that don't do art.
Uh-huh. That aren't active in their in their field.
And there's a lot of them out there. I mean, you know, can you say maybe they're just so dedicated to teaching they have no time to do art? I don't know. I can't judge that. But, you know, it's the experience of making art that gives you greater experience to teach art.
Right.
So I always thought that came in like a hand in glove kind of thing.
I do too. And I love when you can get that interaction between your own art making and then translate your challenges into a lesson plan.
Yeah.
It's just so direct and immediate, you know, to show and tell basically the steps as you go through them. Some are going to be right. Some are going to be wrong, but that's all a learning experience.
So once I got done with kind of messing around with classes and school and all this kind of thing, I decided I'm going to spend, this was my goal. It didn't happen this way. 5 years making art without going to galleries, going to museums, going to school. The first part of that was I was interested in abstraction, but I knew right away that there was this interest in realism and those kinds of things. So I spent a lot of time just isolating myself, teaching myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very important. I think it lasted 3 years where I was very, I didn't go anywhere, did enter shows, didn't do anything. I felt like I had to give myself a residency.
Yeah.
That I was teaching myself. At that time, they didn't have the internet. You know, you could go to the library and look at books and all that. But I didn't want to do that anymore. Uh-huh. I just wanted it to come from myself. And that was an important time for me, I think, because I was experimenting with different images. I was always trying to say, you know, what image can I do that people don't see all the time? You know? And then I still do that. Right. But those 3 years were important for me as the school was.
Too. Oh, yeah. To give yourself that gift of time. And not a lot of people have the luxury to do that.
I have to thank my first wife, Lynn, because she was making the money at the time and she backed me and being a house husband because we had two kids and I would work all night and those kinds of things. So kudos to her. So.
Sure, sure. It takes the support system around you to make these things work.
Mm-hmm.
What's the craziest job you've ever had?
The craziest job? I guess the many hats I wore for 29 years at the Midland Center for the Arts.
Yeah.
As teacher and then hanging the shows, preparator, doing all that kind of stuff, getting in huge crates, unpacking them, packing them back up, you know, learning. You had to learn about a lot of math to be able to
hang
art like that. And Bruce Winslow was he was my boss at that time, the director of that. He and I were a great team. We traveled all over the country to pick up art from some very well-known artists. And of course, we in the evenings, we would sit. Oh, we'd have a little toddy here and there and then draw bars, you know. And then we would switch each other's drawings around every 15 minutes. And that was a lot of fun. So working like that, you know, as an installer, preparator, was enjoyable and at the same time could be really hard too.
Right.
And you've done that as well.
Oh, yes. And, you know, when we were organizing this particular talk today, I took the kind of a thought that what can we tell artists to make it easier on their road down in the art world? And one thing I thought was be kind to the installers and preparators and the curators. Be kind to them. They are your people and you can make it easy for them. Some things that would make it easy for them is when you drop off your work, being on time. These are just little hints.
Oh, yes. That, you know, there was certain people that would always come in late and you'd have to stay extra and those kinds of things, you know. And also, if you're kind to them, mm-hmm. they're going to appreciate that. They're going to say, you know, it's not like all of a sudden you're going to get your plate, your piece in the main. You know, that's not why you be kind to be kind.
Well,
don't be it kind.
Could, it could help.
It could, but
it could help.
It's just good to be kind to people.
It is right? good to be kind. And those, you know, again, we're talking deadlines. And if you can make that a little bit easier when you're dropping off, putting your labels on the back properly, you know, picking it up on time. I've been guilty of not picking it up on time. And it's not a good look, people. It really isn't. So I learn from me. Just work with them. Because when a show comes up, or let's say they have a last minute cancellation, it happens. And you're willing and ready and you've got the inventory, you have a stab at it. You really do. If you've been kind to those people.
Yeah. Well, I remember a situation where this was towards the end of my career at the Center for the Arts, maybe a couple years before that, that I was told to have a show, a 1 month show. We can't pay anything for the artist. And I had to find the people that I knew that I had a relationship with as a friend and let's get it going. You know, later on there was a grumbling, well, he chose his friends. Well, I didn't have much choice. I had a week to put this together.
That's right.
But those four people were people that I've had communication with that I knew their art was good. And so I knew.
Yeah. You knew they had a body of work. Mm-hmm. You knew they would be ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it does pay off.
Yeah.
So be kind. Picture framing.
Picture
frame.
We've
both done that. That was a great job.
Oh.
I really do like picture framing. As you know, I do. Because I cut all your mats.
Now, she says that although I manage a frame store. And I can't. Cutting mats is something you need to keep doing. If you don't.
Don't use it.
Or if you get bifocals, which I had. Now I don't need those anymore. But I could not cut a mat with a bifocals, you know.
I love cutting mats.
Yeah. Plus, yeah, exactly. She loves cutting mats.
I don't know why.
I don't.
It's a maker in me, I guess.
Yeah.
But luckily, that's a good combination for us.
Yeah. Well, I started working at Cooper's in Saginaw.
Cooper's. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And after a year, I was manager of Cooper's in Saginaw. Then I was hired in Midland by a framing business out of Cooper's for more money. And worked there for a while. And then I moved to Chicago because of my portrait business. And I'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Another thing here. And ended up at Goods of Evanston, which was an amazing place. And I was what they call a fitter. I would get everybody's mats together and everybody's frames together and put it all together.
Uh-huh.
And then we had a checker who checked that out. And if there was a piece of dust, would come back to you.
Come back.
You
know?
And they'd circle it right around the glass. And it's like, geez, you know. But that gave you a good eye for that. I don't think that skill today would, you know, if I frame today, it's not like I used to frame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I worked there as a fitter. And for those of you out there, picture somebody that's really clumsy and cuts themselves a lot.
So, oh, yeah. You even have a T-shirt kind of to that effect.
Right? So I think I went to the emergency room
five
times in a year for cutting myself here and there. So they finally made me manager.
That is so hilarious.
So I managed 40 framers, and that's how I met Todd Burrows. We had an interview with him, a good friend, and he runs the Atelier in Royal Oak. And I just loved that job. It was such a busy place that people had to take tickets.
Oh,
and
wow.
I just thrived on problems. I loved problems.
Solving
the problems. You know? And there's so many funny stories in that I have. Not many can I tell on, you know, but if I look at all my jobs that were, and it was art related too, because I would frame for some of the big Chicago artists at that time.
Uh-huh.
And I met a lot of the big Chicago artists, yeah, and we became friends.
That is so great.
John Sobraw being one, yes, of them, you know, and yes, Chris Kaler being another one.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we had this kindred spirit. You know, I was an artist that framed,
right?
You know, and they were mostly teaching these people. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that was my favorite job. At least 4 or 5 of those years, that was my favorite job that I ever had, mm-hmm, other than doing my art.
Right.
Because I was around artists all the time. I was around the excitement all the time. And I couldn't get wait to go home and work. Right.
Yes. Yes.
I wasn't using that artistic creative mind. I was using my design. But as a manager, I was just making sure everybody else was doing their job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they were just happy that I wasn't going in the ER. So
right.
I think that worked out well.
That did work out well.
Yeah.
I had a different path to becoming a picture framer. And again, it was one of my all-time favorite jobs too, but my path was actually meeting another artist, Diane Lounsbury Williams. I know you listen out there, Diane. And she and I met and decided, and we didn't know each other from A Man in the Moon, but we met and we were both very passionate artists. And we decided that we were going to rent a studio come hell or high water. And we found a spot, a really nice spot to rent. And it was reasonable. And we called it the Brass Easel. So,
okay.
And it was our very first venture into business,
uh-huh,
on our own. My first time. And I'm going to say this is where my entrepreneurial spirit really kicked in when we opened this. So once we're in there, we decided, okay, we have to pay the rent. So we set it up as a gallery, of course. And then Diane had a mat cutter. And she taught me how to cut mats. And that's where that started. And then we opened the picture framing part of it. Just by learning as we go, it was inventing tools as we went along. We were able to connect with some other artists who had connections in the wholesale corner frame market for chops, they call them. And we just dove in, you know, we ended up getting our certification, actually through Larson Picture Framing, mm-hmm, did the training there, which was very intense and wonderful. And I remember being in that studio / gallery, because we did all of our painting there as well. Mm-hmm. And one night we had a lower level because we had expanded, and I was walking down the stairs and it just hit me. Like, I felt like the luckiest artist in the world, because it's one of those moments when you go, I am so happy to be where I am right now. I had all the tools I needed to complete the picture frames. I had all the tools I needed to paint my artwork, and I had a place to display the work. We had really built it into this very wonderful place that people wanted to come to. And that just hit me. I think of that often. That particular moment when I was stepping down to the lower level thinking, I have it all, you know, we've got it at our fingertips. This is the best. And so that stayed with me. And, you know, the framing customers were great. I'm trying to think, there weren't any big, gigantic, crazy things. The craziest thing that happened, though, is we did get a contract for a Holiday Inn. Uh-huh. That was big. All the artwork we were to do, paint all the artwork and also frame it and install it. And that was a major break for us to get that contract, because not only were we framing everything, we were painting everything.
Well, you know, I remember a lot of instances in the framing business, but one comes to mind. Saturday was always our biggest day.
Yeah.
I mean, it was huge, and, you know, 100 people were coming in and whatever, but there's this elderly couple,
uh-huh,
which now was younger than me, came into the store with a picture of their grandson, And he had got killed in a car accident.
Oh, dear.
And the funeral was that day.
Oh.
Now, if you ever work in a frame store, you don't just
Someone says, you need it today. You go, I'm sorry.
You know that. But with the circumstances, I said, just let me, we can do this. We can do this.
Yeah.
So I did have a fitter down that did all the work, and I got it done, and they, you know, within an hour we got it done.
Uh-huh.
And put a nice dust cover on the back. Uh-huh. And they were really sad, and they said, how much do I owe you? I said, you don't owe me anything.
Oh,
I said, this is a gift from us to you.
Yes.
For what you're going through.
Yes.
So the next day, now, even though I managed the store, there was a general manager, because we had an art supply area.
Right.
And we had a framing area.
It was a big store, yeah.
Right. And then there was a general manager and an owner. So the story got out that I gave this guy this thing. And the general manager was not pleased. He was kind of ticked off about it.
Uh-oh.
But the owner said, I love it. I love it that you did that. And what happened? 3 months later, this guy, I didn't know who he was, this older person.
Right.
You know, he owned a big company, and he had us frame 50 pieces.
No way.
Right? So the act of kindness is not, I'm going to be kind to this guy because he's going to come back. No, I mean, I know what he was going through, and that's the least we could do as a company.
Right.
I mean, if you're a company and you're nice, you're humane, you treat people nice, you're going to get people back.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
You know, if you're a stick in the mud, and, you know, don't pay attention to people, and they don't want to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Why should they? They have other places to go to.
That's right. That's right.
So, so that was it made me think about that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is so true. You never know where these decisions are going to take you, who you're going to be talking to, and find out later what they're up to in their lives. And it, you have to be on best impression at all times. I feel, you know, I'm mentoring a group right now, and I'm talking about how important that introduction is, because you never know where things are going to lead you. That ties into being kind to the people that help you with your art career too.
Well, you know, and you are naturally effervescence. You know, you're a friendly person, you smile a lot, and you go to the grocery store, all of a sudden somebody will call you to jury a show that you, I mean, she gets all these calls to jury all these shows. I'm like, well, you know, those of you who know me, I am a wonderful person deep inside.
You really are. You get called a jury.
No, I understand, but I have my demeanor is not like your demeanor.
Oh, no,
You know, so I look a little serious.
Those opportunities will pop up for you at different times. I'm looking over here because we have our little whiteboard that we work from. I had a job and I did love it. It came to me as part of being an artist and people knowing that I'm an artist. And I worked for a specialty store up northern Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me back to school to acquire my interior design portion. So because they had furniture and design services, so I became their designer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot of fun, but that had some really funny stories with it. And
Can you mention it?
Yes, I can. I can mention a couple of them. One of them was installing window treatments. Okay. So as a artist / designer, I would come up with these beautiful boards, visionary boards for the clients, mm-hmm. showing everything. So that was cool. So I recommended these particular window treatments, and I had a gentleman who would help me install, and we would install these things together. And we ended up in this predicament where I had designed this treatment to go over a bathtub, right?
Yeah.
So the only way we could install it was to both get in the bathtub and, you know, squirm around and get this crazy window treatment up. Well, I accidentally hit the faucet.
Of course you did.
that. We had our hands up in the air, holding up this window treatment and trying to drill and do all this stuff at the same time. And I couldn't reach back down to turn it off. So there we are, just laughing our heads off. And we, yeah, problem solved. Client didn't know. Thank God the client wasn't there. That's the best way to install things. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to frame things too. Make sure the client isn't around see the inner workings. But oh my God, we laughed so hard.
I guess.
And then the other time was I went on a design call to a house, and I love dogs. I love dogs. And I sat down and they said, oh, you don't care if we let Marmaduke out, do you? I said, well, no. Of course, it's a Great Dane. And that Great Dane, when I was sitting and talking to the clients, came up to me, and my head and their head were exactly at the same level. And this crazy dog had his nose right like 2 inches from my nose through the entire presentation. And they thought that was the cutest thing ever.
Well, people love dogs, love it when you
love dogs.
Yeah.
So I just kept my composure with this Great Dane right there.
You didn't end up in a bathtub with the Great Dane.
No, I didn't end up in a bathtub with the Great Dane.
That's a good thing.
These jobs where people are inviting you into their homes and trusting you to come up with solutions for them, they get very personal. And just like the art teaching is very personal. Yeah. You really get into relationships.
Well, there was a whole different side. I started in school doing a lot of portraits, and I was really good at drawing portraits because I liked it. You know, when you like something, you want to get better, you get better, and so on. So I had a show of my portraits, and I was just drawing people, you know, nobody in particular. What I wasn't doing was, you know, taking stuff off the internet because there wasn't anything.
Right.
So I had to kind of figure out which people I would use, you know.
Who did you? I mean, were you finding them in magazines, or what were you doing? Or just
early on, I was finding them in magazines.
Uh-huh. To get the experience and to build.
Which is kind of embarrassing, actually, because I don't like people finding stuff on the internet and drawing it, but you know, it's a learning tool. But I didn't have any of those. I just took pictures of people I knew.
Right.
You know,
right.
I had a miserable little camera. I don't know how I did this, but I had a show at a healing arts gallery in a hospital.
That's a nice spot.
And I got 12 commissions out of that, which kept me busy for almost 2 years. I was making good money with these. Uh-huh. And then I was picked up by Portrait Chicago as one of their artists.
Wow.
Because they didn't have a great graphite artist. And they had some very famous artists.
Mm-hmm.
And I was living here, working through them. And then we decided to move to Chicago. That's mm-hmm. what got me into Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And I worked as a portrait artist for them. And there were some funny stories there, too.
Oh, I bet.
You'd meet people you don't know.
Right.
You have to draw them in your style, but, you know, can you put your whole heart into it? It was hard for me to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember one time I had this guy, he was a physician working with imaging x-ray.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I was excited because I come from Remscheid, Germany, is where the guy in Lennep there, he invented the x-ray.
Uh-huh.
So I was really excited. I said, you know, I'm from Lennep, Germany, you know, where they invented the x-ray. And he goes, so?
Trying to make conversation.
Okay, then.
That's so awkward.
You know, really? When you're drawing these people, you want to know these people a little bit.
Rapport.
You know, I did this huge commission for a 50th birthday for this guy who was the vice president of Standard Oil.
Uh-huh.
And the waitress that he married.
Seriously,
that was what happened. You know, they had so much money in Rolls Royce, so I had to do a painting of them together and all their Rolls Royces and all this kind of thing. And then when they had this big elaborate party, which cost thousands, $500,000, they had camels and all kinds of craziness. And Who's Who in Chicago was everybody, and people flew in from LA. I got to meet a lot of pretty famous people. I'm not going to go through who, but
no.
Then about a half a year later, the waitress called me and said, you know, I've changed my makeup, my eye makeup color. Can you change that on the painting?
Oh, wow.
Says, well, you know, that's going to cost you $1,000. Oh, sure. You know, this is like, in the 80s, you know. So I'd come and change it.
Oh, my gosh. So you really did. It was an oil painting and you went in and just
changed your makeup. It? Yeah.
Wow. Now that's we could market that.
Wait a minute. This isn't, it happened 4 times.
Whoa.
Pretty soon there was. You would look at the painting with this huge amount of paint on her eyes. You know,
relief on her eyes.
You know, like it looked like somebody punched her in the face or something like this.
It's hilarious.
So I finally said, we can't do this anymore. You know, either you keep the same makeup or you don't worry about it.
Start a new portrait.
I was able to scrape some of the paint off and sand it down
this
a little
hilarious.
Bit.
Hilarious.
But that's $1,000 every time, you know. So it was, you know. It was hilarious, you know. And
did you ever think about maybe raising it a couple hundred dollars every time you did it, or you kind of stuck to your guns?
$1,000 would be like $3,000.
Yeah.
You know? And they were so millionaires funny. Over and over again. I probably could have. She wouldn't have blinked an eye, you know.
Yeah.
But I would tell, you know.
That's
my
so
wife
funny.
At the time. I said, yep, going back and putting more makeup on the cash cow.
Oh, shoot.
But what happened after a while with doing portraits, the idea of doing portraits in the day and working on my own work at night didn't work.
Didn't pan out.
I started to lose the love of drawing. I started to lose the love of it all. Uh-huh. And that's when I said, I can't do this anymore. I think I'm just going to get a job in a frame store and we'll talk about it. That's how I got to goods.
And,
you know, I remember all the beautiful people I worked with there. There was some amazing artists there. It was just insane. So, portraits, commission portraits are great for some. Would I be open for a commission? Yeah. If I have control for it and it would be interesting, I would do a commission portrait.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like this. You have to do it this way. You have to do it this way.
Right.
No, if you're hiring me to do your portrait, I want to do it my own.
Yes. You want the look.
Have you done commissions?
I'm embarrassed.
What?
I have done commissions of abstract work.
Okay.
But of course, I make sure that they know what they're in for. But early on, I did a portrait. I still can't believe I even accepted this. I don't know what I was thinking. And it was two sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right before Christmas. And I completed the portrait. And everything seemed to be going fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get ready to drop it off. And they have that look, you know, that look where they go, oh, my God, you know, one of those looks. And I'm like, oh, geez. I said, well, and I'm a firm believer that I only want them to I'm a softy to buy that if they're perfectly 100% pleased with it. You know, I'm like, money back guarantee. No problem. Yeah.
That will not make you money.
That will not. Don't do that, people. No, you know, have your contract. Get your 50% down that you keep no matter what. I didn't do any of that. I was just like, I don't know what I was thinking. So I finished it and they had that look. And I said, well, is there something I can change? I can still change this. Well, not really. It's just not working. We just don't like it. And I said, well, so then I started drilling down a little bit more. Well, do you like, her? Do you like this drawing? Yeah, that's really nice. That's really nice. Well, so it's the other one? And they went, yeah, it's the other one. And I went, okay, well, I can change her and this and that. Well, it ends up that there had been a big blow up right before I came over with the portrait, and the two sisters, what I can decipher out of this, had a giant fight. The parents were mad. Everybody's mad. And it's Christmas Eve and they want to give the portrait. And I said, you know what? I think I have a solution for you. And they went, really? Yes, we cut it in half and I will mat the one that you like.
Okay, that's a different one.
So I framed and matted the one half of that portrait. And they bought it. They bought it.
Well, that's a good deal.
I negotiated that.
No, I went through the same things with this, you know, because my work is so detailed and so slow that I work from reference photos. Uh-huh. And at the time I saw, well, I don't even need that person again. You know, I have a good reference, you know, I would sit there with, you know, talking about x-rays and not getting any answers.
Yeah, right.
So I decided they need to come back every week and look at what I'm doing.
Yes, that's a good rule.
Right.
And
if they have something that they're concerned about, they tell me at the time. Because if you show it to them, it's portrait shock, what they call that.
Portrait shock.
And Portrait Chicago always told us, make him look younger and make him look thinner.
Okay, that's a good call.
And that was, I guess that worked out pretty good. But then, you know, you were just doing it for the money. But,
right.
You know, pleasing the sitter, you know, I would get something like this. I'd get it done. And let's say I do it for on a lady, and I do the portrait, and she's like, I don't know, there's something wrong with the nose. And I goes, no, I look at your nose, and she goes, let me get my husband here.
And
husband comes up, she goes, don't you think there's something wrong with the nose? I'm like, all right, you set him up.
Oh, you set him up for sure.
Right. Of course, he's going to find something wrong with that. Uh-huh. So usually it was a matter of shading. It wasn't the proportions that were wrong. It was I got the shading a little wrong. Uh-huh. And a lot of times that would be in the cheek or in the chin. It wasn't even on one of the, you know, eyes, nose, or mouth things.
Right. Oh, so, my God.
And remember that as if you do figures today, you know, a lot of times, you know, you're measuring like crazy trying to get the mouth right, but you don't think about what's around the mouth.
Right.
Think about those things, because that will make that, you know, portrait come out, and, you know, the shading part.
Yes. Well, we've covered a lot of ground here. Yeah. And I was
a juggler.
A juggler. No, we didn't cover that.
Okay. All right. We won't talk about that.
Okay. We won't. But I will say a funny juggler story.
Oh, no. It's going to be in a bathtub.
No, it's when you and I were actually picking up work as preparators for an exhibit. Uh-huh. And we rolled into Louisville, Kentucky. And one of the ceramicists had his work in the in his car, of course. Mm-hmm. And he's throwing the pots to me, wrapped in bubble wrap, throwing them.
Oh, I remember that.
And I'm catching them, and I'm like horrified that he's.
I wish I could remember his name. Do you remember his name?
I want to say Feng Wu. I think that's pretty sure.
Maybe we can put that in our show notes.
He was amazing. Cavalier with his work. His work is beautiful. But he was like, here, grab this. Yeah. I'm like, whoa.
See, that's where my
slow down. I will put him in the show notes because he's delightful guy.
Well, to just kind of cap this off, you know, give yourself time to be an artist.
Yes.
And if that works by being around artists, or if that works, you know, in a different kind of job, whatever, always think about giving yourself time to do an art. I know people, unfortunately, this has happened to many women, feel guilty about it a bit, but you know, they stopped when they were raising children.
Yeah.
They stopped doing art.
I did.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And that's why I just tied my kids up in the
closet. Well, no, it seems like when they're about 3 to 4 years old, you're able to get back. And that's when I started getting back in and put the studio right in the kitchen and just made it handy for myself. Mm-hmm. And then things were back to normal. Then you feel, you feel like you're kind of back in the swing of it. So,
Think about it, guys out there. Think about all the jobs you've had and that helped your art and that didn't help your art. And
hope these stories kind of give you, you know, when we have these impromptu talks, Armin, I feel like we are brainstorming while we're talking a lot of times. It's a conversation.
That's the nucleus spontaneous. Of this podcast.
Yes.
Because we would sit here on Saturdays usually, or some days, sit outside, have coffee, and get in these great discussions. And then we should let people listen to our great discussions.
That's right. And I feel like that as we're talking, little tidbits will come out that will help an artist. So that's kind of the whole purpose. We're trying to help others on their journey, as well as collect information for ourselves.
Yep.
It's just a fun time. It's a great time to be with you, Armin. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed this conversation.
This is the only time we talk now.
We just talk on the podcast. No, that's not true. That's not true. But anyway, it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. And we've started this new deal with Patreon to help defray some of the costs of production. So if you're so inclined, check it out. Go to patreon.com, look up Art Ladders. It's $5 a month, about the same price as a grande pumpkin spice latte mm-hmm. a month. So, and we're going to be adding some features as we go along to that. But a shout out.
Yeah, we're working on that. Yeah. Production costs, of course, you know, are what they are. And so we decided to ask you guys to support us a little bit. And listen, you know, we're not changing anything if you don't.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. And I want to say hi to one of our new members, Phyllis Buechler out there. Thank you for joining Patreon,
supporting us.
Yes.
And like Val said, we're going to have some special things happening with that in the future coming up.
Yeah. We'll be sure to let you know. So check it out. And
should we tell who our next guest
is? Yes. I was just going to lead into that because normally I don't really reveal the next guest.
This guy
but
is
in
so
this
important.
Case, I. The power of Instagram and the power of listening and hearing about artists. But we are going to be having artist and author John Seed. He is the author of Disrupted Realism. It's a book that I refer to often in my classes on abstraction. You refer to it in your classes on realism. Mm-hmm. Check out the book. He has a new book coming out called More Disrupted Realism. He accepted our invitation to be an interview guest and
internationally famous.
Yes. You don't want to miss this episode. Check him out. Go to Google and check out some of his previous interviews with folks.
Let's say his name again.
John Seed, S-E-E-D.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm so excited to talk with him.
It's going to be quite an honor to talk to him.
So until next time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep in touch with us.
Keep creating.
Yeah. Bye now.
Bye.
Thank you to our sponsor, Golden Apple Studio and Residency. The residencies provide dedicated time and space in which visual artists and writers may pursue their work in a beautiful setting located about an hour north of Bar Harbor, Maine. It's on the rugged and remote coast of Ripley Cove. Shelley and Greg Stevens' commitment to inviting artists to flourish at their amazing property is well known by the artists who have attended their residencies for over 14 years. Looking ahead to summer of 2025, I encourage you to consider gifting yourself with your time to flourish. Learn more at goldenapplestudio.com. Email director and working artist Shelley Stevens with your questions and scheduling inquiries at snstevens@goldenapplestudio.com. That's snstevens@goldenapplestudio.com. And P.S. Calling all writers, playwrights, and composers, Golden Apple Art Residency in Down East Maine has a 2-week residency session remaining in the summer of 2024. The schedule is to be filled by a writer in residence from August 18th until the 31st, 2024. Accommodations include a beautiful, quiet seaside apartment with attached writer's studio. All meals are provided, including dinner served each evening in the main dining room. If you or someone you know might be interested in applying, please contact Director Shelley Stevens at snstevens@goldenapplestudio.com. Thank you for listening. You can find our past and future episodes at anchor.fm, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Be sure to follow us on our Facebook page, Art Ladders, The Creative Climb with Valerie Allen and Armin Mersman. Special thanks to our producer, Taylor Kramer of Cold Shower Media.
And check out our websites, ValerieAllenArt.com, ArminMersman.com. Stay creative, stay curious,
and we'll see you next time.